Hello again, everyone, and welcome into That SEC Podcast. Good to be with you guys once again for episode number 20. Thank you for tuning in to That SEC Podcast, your SEC Podcast. I'm Cody McClure, along with Michael Bratton, joining me as always, SEC Mike. And by the way, if I sound a little bit under the weather, Mike told me that I sounded like I had a cold. So how's it going, Mike?
I'm doing better than you, it sounds like, but you know, I'm just trying to figure out how in the world Gus Malzahn got outcoached by Ed Orgeron this weekend. That was definitely the biggest head scratcher for me of the weekend.
It was crazy. You know, Auburn got up big in that game, 20-0, and I mean, it was 17-0 at the end of the first quarter, and I just kind of thought, well, Auburn's just going to roll. I mean, it kind of seemed that way, like that LSU was just totally outmanned, and then one of those strange things in college football. LSU comes back, and you had the big punt return to start the fourth quarter. It went scoreless in the third. LSU comes from behind, down 23-14. Had a huge punt return from DJ Shark and cut it to a 2-point game, and then got the win in the fourth. So, really impressive.
Yeah, and you know, that punt return, even though it didn't give LSU the lead at that time, I don't know about you, but I just had the feeling like you just knew that LSU was going to win that game at that point.
Yeah, it gave them the spark that they needed because, I mean, they had cut it to 9 at the half. You know, it was 23-14, and then it was just kind of – things were just kind of stale for both teams in the third. But yeah, once LSU took that punt back, the crowd got back into it. And then, of course, they just had to kick a field goal and then kicked one more just, you know, for icing on the cake to make Auburn score a touchdown. And Auburn was not able to do that. So, big win.
And I was so high on Auburn coming into this game, and they looked so good early on. I've almost completely gone away from this because, you know, obviously I've been on Twitter for a couple years. But, you know, when I first got on it, I was real bad for just tweeting out, you know, such and such game is well in hand in the first quarter, and it seemed like it would always bite me in the ass. So I generally stay away from that completely. I went away from that strategy here. You know, I tweeted something out about how there's, you know, I couldn't imagine how anyone picked LSU to cover. Auburn's going to roll. And it, yeah. And of course, that came back to bite me, but I got to make fun of myself a little bit after that game. But I was still kind of shocked that that happened.
Well, you know, I mean, you can't kick yourself too much for that. I mean, you and I are in the prediction-making business. So, you know, I mean, people want to – that's the thing to me that I hate people on Twitter because they always want to give you hell for when you get things wrong. And, like, you know, do they not ever make predictions? Like, just because ours are public, you know what I mean? What if some guy just – you know, nobody's right about everything. So what if some guy just thinks something's going to happen? I guess if you don't tweet about it and then you're wrong, you know, you don't get any criticism that way. I've never understood criticizing people for predictions because everybody thinks a certain way about how a game's going to go, and then sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. I did see a guy recently tweet out. He like responds to all of Feinbaum's tweets, and he was touting his. He said he had like an 82% record this year, but you had to click on his link to get it. So I went to his link, and he didn't. He doesn't even post his picks before the games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I could say I'm 92%. You know what I mean? Like at least we go on record like. And say things. I mean, everybody wants to act like they know everything, but they never make anything public. So, anyway, I'll never fault you for that. So, I'll never come at you in your DMs and with with death threats or anything. So, don't worry.
Another big surprise for me this weekend was Texas A&M. You know, we've talked, you know, every week about how improving this team is, but I just kind of thought, you know, they're so loaded with youth. Going on the road to a hostile environment. Florida's bringing out the swamp-ass jerseys. They got that crowd going in the swamp. I didn't think Texas A&M had it in them to win a game like this. Florida jumped out to somewhat of an early lead. I believe it was 10-3 at one point. It looked like I was going to be right there, but you know, Texas A&M, they just keep doing what they're doing. They play tough physical defense. They don't give up. And Kellen Mond, you know, he's not exactly lighting it up, but he's not costing A&M any games. He's extending plays with his legs. I thought that was a huge win for A&M, and you know, it's a bit too early to put Jim McElwain like fully on the hot seat, but with Georgia coming up here, they got Florida State. He's never beaten Florida State. If they get blown out in both those games, I think it's a realistic chance that he does not come back.
Florida fans are very unhappy with McElwain right now, and you've kind of seen Florida's offense, just the way that it sputters. It's inept. I mean, the coaching is terrible. The players, the execution is terrible. It's all terrible. Florida's offense is just awful. And, you know, I thought Texas A&M was going to win the game, and they did, but they didn't win it big like I thought. I thought A&M might win by 14 to 17 points. That didn't happen. It was a close game, but A&M got the win. You were right, though, on Kellen Mond going down there. He was clearly rattled. I mean, he only – I don't know if you saw – his the stat column, but I was kind of shocked to see that he was 8 for 24, so only completed 33% of his passes. So you know, he didn't play very well at all. But A&M able to get the job done, and really the player of the game for them was Daniel LaCamera, the kicker. He scored. He was 4 for 4 on field goals. Scored all 9 points in the fourth quarter, and without him, they don't win the game. So. Pretty good, good showing there by the Aggies.
Yeah, and I saw this stat this weekend. This shocked me. You know, is McElwain brought in to be an offensive guru? He's, you know, at Colorado State he did impressive things. Obviously at Alabama when he was the coordinator there. Florida apparently have 4 passing touchdowns on the season. One of it was the Fail Mary against Tennessee. 2 of them were against Kentucky when they had 10 men on the field. So outside of those 3 plays, they have 1 passing touchdown on the season. And that's just a remarkable stat after, what is it, 6 games already.
Yeah, they're just awful. I mean, the offense is just so hard to watch. And people, you know, you're right. People thought that, you know, you get rid of Muschamp, you bring in this McElwain guy, and he's supposed to be some kind of offensive genius. And right now, they have not had an offense in years. I mean, they had some bright spots, you know, early on with Will Grier, but they really have not had anything. Almost, you can go back to Tebow. These offenses have just not been very good. So, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked at all to see Florida make a change at some point in this season.
And speaking of the hot seat, Butch Jones, you know, lost to South Carolina. Had 2 weeks to prepare, put up 9 points against the Gamecocks, and this is a South Carolina team that was very undermanned. You know, I've been very high on Jake Bentley. I think he's a great player, but you know, this has been his third or fourth week where he's not really been that great, and they still lose to the Gamecocks. What's your take on that one? And surely that's the final nail in the coffin of the Butch Jones era.
Yeah, I just honestly, I don't know what John Curry's waiting on. I mean, I don't know what more you can see, what more you need to know with Butch Jones. The negative people on Twitter, and you know, certain people are just negative, and you don't want to let them be too loud, because for a long time I think it was a negative minority, but it was a very loud negative minority. Now it's a majority. I mean, you don't have very many defenders left for Butch Jones. You haven't scored a touchdown since the UMass game. UMass felt like a loss anyway. You lose to South Carolina. You get shut out by Georgia. You lose to that terrible Florida team we just talked about. It's year 5, you know, and I think that is the simplest way to put it, really. Watching the game on Saturday against South Carolina, I didn't see anything too bad. You know, from just a one-game perspective, I didn't see any play calls necessarily that I hated or anything like that. It's just a matter that you are in year 5, and all of these things have escalated to the point that they're at now, and you don't have the depth to hold off South Carolina in the second half. Your defense just gets worn down, and people and teams know how to beat Tennessee. You just keep running the ball at them, and eventually they lay down and die. So, yeah, I don't know how Curry hasn't made a move yet.
Are you sure it's year five for Butch Jones? The only reason I ask is because basically any negative thing I tweet about Tennessee, I'd say one out of three responses are year five or it's year five.
It's year five. Well, I get that because, I mean, that's really all you need to know. You know, it's just a matter – because, like, if these things were happening in year two, it would be one thing. But when you give a coach this amount of time, you should have the depth. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be losing the way that Tennessee's losing. And I think it just shows you it's coaching malpractice.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, Tennessee, typically they'll give you like one or maybe two quarters of really hard play where they look engaged. They look, you know, they look like a team that they should look like. But the rest of the time, they just look terrible. And it seems like you get about one solid quarter out of this team every week, and you don't know when it's going to come. And that's... it's a bad sign. The talent is clearly in place, but not much else is. And it's not going to get any easier next week going down to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, and I think in on Saturday, really you got a whole half out of the defense. It was more than just a quarter. But I think what's happening to them is that they just get worn out, you know, because Tennessee comes out in the second half, and it's three and out, three and out, three and out. I mean, negative yardage. Literally, they would have been better punting on first down in the second half. Probably would have had a better chance to win the game if they had punted every time they got the ball on first down. So when you're in a situation like that, I mean, your defense just – there's nothing you can do. I mean, I think the defense did all it could do, and it just got worn down. So mm-hmm. And eventually South Carolina put that final touchdown in, and that ended up being the dagger. So not a good look.
Any major takeaways from, I think, the two best teams, the consensus best teams in the SEC, Georgia? They beat up on Missouri 53-28. You know, so Missouri actually ended up covering in that game. I called that one. I saw a letdown coming, and we hadn't seen Georgia really get tested through the air. Drew Locke was hitting some real bombs on him late. I think this was the most impressive Drew Locke has looked maybe in his career. And I believe that game was tied up at 21 at one point, and if Missouri had anything resembling a competent defense, I think that would have been a real game. And then Alabama, of course, crushed Arkansas 41-9. It kind of says all you need to know. Alabama scored on the very first play. It was a 75-yard touchdown by Damian Harris. Arkansas had nothing going the whole game. I believe they scored a touchdown in the closing minutes of the game to make it look somewhat respectable, but they were just clearly outmatched that entire game.
They did score a touchdown late, and thank God they missed the extra point, because I had them at minus 31.5. early in the week, I jumped on Alabama minus 31.5. I've never been more lucky in my life, and that just doesn't happen very often, a missed extra point. So congrats to Alabama on covering. I didn't see a lot in that game that really – stood out to me. Just a dominant Alabama win. Bama doing Bama things. Maybe it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. Honestly, I saw that being kind of a 52-0 kind of game. So nothing really there that stands out. Mizzou, Georgia. I do think Georgia's defense was, I don't want to say exposed, but it was tested for the first time this year. Mm-hmm. They finally went up against a quarterback that could test them. And you saw it with Drew Locke. He ends up throwing four touchdown passes on him and about 253 yards, I believe. So a big game for Mizzou's passing game. Emmanuel Hall, he had a great game as well, catching a couple of deep balls. So do we chalk that up to Georgia maybe not as good as we thought they were in the secondary? Or is it just a matter of Drew Locke's going to get his? You know, Drew Locke's going to get what he gets, and you just make sure they can't run the ball on you and you keep them one-dimensional.
I think so, and, you know, as I saw leading up to that game, you know, Georgia had played three great SEC games back-to-back-to-back, and they just looked dominant in each one. And I think this was a natural letdown. This is a home game against Missouri. You know, Missouri, a lot of people think, is the worst team in the SEC. I think there was just going to be a letdown. It was written all over it from my perspective, and just you know, it just looked like some of the defensive backs were maybe a little disengaged there, and you know, if you make that mistake against almost any team on the back end, it's not going to bite you. But Drew Lock, you know, he's got that huge arm. He's got some really fast receivers. They were just really caught off guard there for about the first half. They made their adjustments at halftime. They really shut them down in the second half. But, you know, that's something they're going to have to work on, because Felipe Franks does have a big arm. But unfortunately for the Gators, you know, they don't really have any receivers outside of Cleveland that can beat you deep.
Yeah, the good news for Georgia fans now is that, as you talk about, now they do get into that bye week. So it comes at a perfect time for Georgia. You're going in undefeated at 7-0, four straight SEC games, and you finally get a little bit of a breather before you have to take on Florida. So Georgia looking good. I didn't see anything that really, you know, would alert me as far as the Georgia defense. The only other games we haven't talked about, Mississippi State got a much-needed win over BYU. Not much to see there, kind of what we expected, right? And just they kind of handled business.
Yeah, my only takeaway from that one was Nick Fitzgerald threw two really bad interceptions in the red zone. So that game should have been a lot worse than the 35-10 final score. I heard someone make a joke that because one of those interceptions was taken back about 80 yards, they said, you know, as long as Mississippi State makes a tackle, BYU's not going to score. Their offense is that bad. And that's exactly what happened. Even though BYU start off in the red zone, they still didn't score out of that possession. So, I mean, BYU is just completely overmatched in that one.
Yeah, I think so. And you're right about those picks. Not a good look from Nick Fitzgerald, but he did account for four touchdowns. Also, he had over 100 rushing yards, and so he had two on the ground and two through the air. So I guess you could say his positives outweighed his negatives. But and then the only other game, Vanderbilt at Ole Miss. Ole Miss got the job done pretty handily, which is really what I expected. The only thing is, I did not expect to see the score nearly as high as it was, 57-35, which Ole Miss was completely in control from the second quarter on. But I guess if you had the over in that one, congratulations. Shea Patterson, A.J. Brown, they look fantastic as usual.
Yeah, and it's wild that only a month ago Vanderbilt had the top scoring defense in the SEC, and I believe one of the tops in the nation. And that defense has just fallen completely apart. I think, you know, obviously the expectations are not that high at Vanderbilt, but I would be a little bit concerned at this point. You know, Derek Mason, I believe he did get an extension this offseason, got a lot of credit after their 3-0 start. They look abysmal right now. I think they are the worst team in the SEC.
Should be fun. Last week of the season when Vanderbilt and Tennessee play, that should be a real blast there for the state that we live in. I think I would rather see MTSU in Memphis, to be honest with you. But anyway,
Before we move on, I don't know if you heard this stat. I can't quote it off the top of my head because I saw it yesterday, but the state of Tennessee has been outscored in SEC games something like 230 something to 108 or something wild like that, and that's only halfway through the season.
Yeah, in Tennessee, I also saw that Tennessee has only accounted for like 29 of that 108, because Vandy put up 35 against Ole Miss. Tennessee has only scored, yeah, they scored 20 against Florida and 9 against South Carolina. So maybe Tennessee is the worst team in the SEC. I don't know.
It's a toss-up right now.
It kind of crazy when Memphis is the clear front runner in the state. So,
well, anyway. Randy Ferguson.
Yeah, yeah. I bet Tennessee fans wish that they had him back right about now. So I guess next we'll get into our Week 8 spread predictions.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get the boring game out of the way first. At the noon game at SEC Network, Idaho at Missouri. I thought Missouri would be a 13-point favorite. You said Missouri only a 9.5-point favorite, and Missouri opened up at 14.5. So I was a point and a half off on that one. I got that.
Well, you nailed that one. I had no idea what to think about that. At one point, I was like at Mizzou minus 18, and I ended up at 9.5. So that just shows you kind of where I was at. I had no idea.
Yeah, and this Idaho team, you know, obviously you think Idaho, this is a terrible, well, I'm sure they are terrible, but they've actually won two games. They beat South Alabama, who, you know, they have some, I don't want to say SEC experience, but they have fared quite well against a couple SEC teams. They beat Mississippi State last year. So I think this is going to be a decent test for Missouri, but, you know, Missouri's coming off five consecutive losses. If they don't lose this one, excuse me, if they don't win this one, Barry Odom might get fired before Butch Jones. Who knows?
Yeah, I'd probably take Idaho to cover, to be honest. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Mizzou, you expect them to play well at some point, but they just really haven't yet. The offense looks good, but not real sure what to think about that one, so we can go ahead and move on if you'd like.
Yeah, okay, the 3:30 game on CBS, this should be a real barn burner. Tennessee at Alabama. I thought Alabama would just be over a four-touchdown favorite. I guessed Alabama minus 28.5. You guessed Alabama minus 34, and you got it exactly right. It's Alabama minus 34.
I nailed it, man. I sat there and thought about it, and the number in my head was 31. And I started thinking about the fact that Tennessee can't score touchdowns. I mean, they can't score at all. They haven't scored a touchdown in almost a month. Mm-hmm. And so I got to thinking, Vegas is thinking Tennessee isn't going to score. And they're going to play Alabama, who has the best defense that's ever been created. And, you know, I mean, where are the points going to come from? Does Tennessee get a field goal? Do they get two field goals? Do they get a garbage touchdown? I would be, honestly, I would be extremely surprised to see Tennessee score 10 points in this game. And so I think that's kind of what Vegas was looking at. I think they're looking at the fact that Alabama might just shut Tennessee out. If not, it be a field goal game. And so basically, I guess you're just kind of looking at Alabama's offense and how much do you trust them to score? 35 to 42, 35 or more, right? So that was my basis. I have no idea if that's what Vegas was thinking too, but that's what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama scored 40 or more in four games. You know, one game they scored 66, the other they scored 59. So this is clearly a team that's going to put up some points. That just seemed like this strikes me as a game where Tennessee would cover, though. I don't know why I get that feeling. You know, maybe not with all the turmoil going on, but you know, I just think that five touchdowns is you know, it's the biggest, apparently the biggest spread in Tennessee Alabama history. So I would tend to lean towards taking the points, to be honest with you, in this one.
I just can't bet on Tennessee to do anything, because I honestly wouldn't be surprised to see Bama hang 50 on Tennessee, and it's like a 52-0 kind of game. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 years ago, Tennessee did go down there, and they played them tough. They played them close. It was 19-14. A lot of people thought Tennessee would lose by a significant margin in that game, but it's just kind of a different story now, you know, kind of a different feel. Tennessee, just not at all good. The offense is terrible. I think I would lean with Bama to cover.
One other thing to think about, though, this will be Alabama's eighth consecutive game. They get the bye after Tennessee, so they might be a little fatigued. I think that's kind of how Tennessee almost kind of caught them in 2015. It was a tired Alabama team and a rested Tennessee team, so. That's something to consider. Yeah. I actually had a. let me throw you this curveball. I had a friend ask me, you know, complete hypothetical here. If Tennessee hired John Gruden today, he was asking me if John Gruden could game plan for Alabama. If John Gruden was game planning for Alabama, would Tennessee cover in this game?
No. I don't think so. I really don't. Maybe I just
that was a quick no.
No, this team sucks. Like everybody wants to put it on Butch Jones, and it is his fault. You know, they're his players, and you put all the responsibility on the head coach. I get that, but it seems like everybody over here, you got a lot of player sniffers over here. Like everybody is totally against criticizing players. Like, oh, they're just kids. They're not any good. I mean, the players suck on Tennessee's team. So.
They're good at Twitter.
Yeah, they're good at Twitter until South Carolina exposes them. But so, you know, the team's not good. The players aren't good. The coach is not good. It just I honestly think Tennessee's the worst-looking team in the SEC right now. So I don't even think Gruden could fix it. Not in a matter of days. It would take a year or two for him to kind of get things going. And also, I think I just believe in Alabama too much. Like, I think Alabama's far and above the entire SEC. So it's kind of where I'm at on it.
Okay, on that depressing note, let's let's go to the 4 o'clock SEC Network game, Kentucky at Mississippi State. I thought Mississippi State would be favored by 2. You said Mississippi State by 4.5. And believe it or not, Mississippi State actually opened as a 10-point favorite in that game.
Really? How about that? I did not think it would be quite that high. I do know that I think typically, and again, this is just me, one guy's opinion here. I don't know if Vegas thinks like this, but typically I value SEC West teams more than SEC East teams, especially when you're talking about the bad ones, like the lower tier ones. It's sort of the reason I liked Ole Miss to beat Vanderbilt. And this game honestly feels kind of similar to me. I do value and respect Mississippi State. Even though they've been blown out twice this season, I still do like them a little bit more than Kentucky. So I guess that number doesn't really shock me, although it does seem a little bit high for you know, Kentucky coming off of a bye, and they're a 5-1 team. So
yeah, the highest I could see this spread was being a touchdown. I didn't think it would get anywhere near that. So 10 was a little stunning to me. Kentucky's coming off a bye. Kentucky won this game last year. Mississippi State won the previous 7. So Dan Mullen really has this Kentucky team's number. I don't know. Early on, I think I would lean towards Kentucky in those points. This just seems like a lot of points. Although, you know, Mississippi State is somewhat one-dimensional, so is Kentucky. If either of these teams gets down, this could be a really tough game to come back in. I'm not sure either team is that much better than the other. I don't know. At this point, I like the way those points look right now.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on the points. I do like Mississippi State to win the game, but I think I might lean with you on Kentucky. If I can get them at 10, if I was going to bet on it, I think I might take Kentucky with the points.
I meant to ask you this when we were talking about Florida and Jim McElwain. Is there any chance you think that if Florida does make a move, I don't know if you're aware, but the athletic director is Scott Strickland, who was at Mississippi State, and I believe he had a hand in hiring Dan Mullen from Florida. Is there any chance Florida would be interested in Dan Mullen?
I think it might be his first phone call. I mean, obviously there's already a relationship there. I think Florida fans would welcome Dan Mullen back with open arms after seeing what he's done at Mississippi State. Obviously he was at Florida as the offensive coordinator under Urban, so I think that Dan Mullen would be a fantastic hire. I mean, honestly, he's always in my, you know, if we're looking at a coaching change at you know, some of the bigger schools, other than just the really, really elite programs, he's always on my hot board. And I'm surprised he has been in Starkville, Mississippi for as long as he has, honestly. So yeah, if I'm Scott Strickland, I'm totally making that phone call.
It could be an interesting dynamic there. I don't know. Scott Strickland is actually really good friends with John Curry. So if Tennessee makes a move, you gotta assume that John Curry may seek out Scott Strickland's opinion, unless, of course, Scott Strickland is thinking the same thing. It could be an interesting dynamic if both Tennessee and Florida are going after the same guy and, the friendships that exist there. I think that'll be something to watch.
Yeah, I'm just really glad we don't have to see Florida's offense this week. That's kind of what I'm looking forward to most on Saturday, is not watching Florida play.
I think more disturbing than the offense was the jerseys. I'm still not sure what they were thinking with that.
They were worse in person than I thought they were going to be. Like when we talked on Friday, I think I said that I didn't hate them as much. I thought they were bad, but I didn't think they were like the worst uniforms ever. And now I kind of think maybe they are.
I particularly didn't get the bright orange lettering and on the helmet on the jersey. I mean, it was such an ugly contrast. It just didn't make any sense to me.
The way that it blended into the grass, it just kind of, it looked like somebody just puked out of a helicopter, and that's what was left on the field. It was bad. They were really ugly, and I'll be glad to see them in blue against Georgia.
Did you see the tweet someone sent out of the? They said if you're colorblind, you can't see Florida on the field.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. I don't know if I should have asked my stepbrother about that, because my stepbrother is colorblind. I don't know what that's like. I mean, I could see him, but it was kind of tough. I mean, camo look, they had it.
Okay, let's move on to the ESPN night game. This will be at 7:15. LSU's going to Ole Miss. I thought LSU would be a 6-point favorite. You said 6.5, and it actually opened up at LSU -7.5. So you get that one as well.
Well, that was just kind of like Wheel of Fortune, or not Wheel of Fortune, but The Price is Right, where you just pick the lowest without going over. Or
yeah, I kind of suspected you. There was some cheapness on that one.
Yeah, honestly, there was, because I didn't want to have the same exact number as you, but I knew that it would probably be somewhere around there, and I really didn't know where to go with it, so I just said, Mike's got 6, I'll go 6.5, and then that way if it's 7, I'll win. So,
you know, I actually really like this number for Ole Miss with a touchdown and half a point. I understand LSU, it looks like they've somewhat righted the ship. You know, they're coming off 2 big wins, but I'm still not quite sold that's a very good team. I don't think Oxford is going to be that intimidating of a place to play. They should certainly win the game. But, I could see Ole Miss scoring a late touchdown and getting that backdoor cover.
Yeah, I'm actually with you on this one. I can see Ole Miss potentially winning the game. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's maybe a field goal game. The fact that Ole Miss gets them at home, I'm with you. I don't think that LSU, I'm still not sold that's a good football team, because you've got to realize they lost to Troy, and now they're coming. Yes, they are coming off of back-to-back wins, good-looking wins, but first of all, that Florida team that they beat, we've already talked about how terrible they are. So how good of a win really is that? And then to come back against Auburn, that is a big win. To beat Auburn on your home field, that's a big win. It's great for Ed Orgeron. But, you know, they did get down 20-0. So a couple of plays swing a little bit differently there in the second quarter. Let's say Auburn gets up 27-0. Then you probably don't see the same kind of comeback as you saw. So I'm with you. I don't think LSU's all that good. I could see Ole Miss winning this game.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw the post-game interview with Shea Patterson, but I thought it was interesting that he commented that, obviously they lost to Alabama. They destroyed them. They lost to Auburn. Auburn was firing on all cylinders. But I think a lot of people wrote off Ole Miss when they lost to Cal. I know I certainly did. And Cal just beat Washington State, which I believe was in the top 10. And not only did they beat them, I think they beat them by about 30 points. And he mentioned that, just noting what a quality team that is. So, I mean, it's possible that they lost to 3 really, really good teams. And I think that gave Ole Miss some motivation going into this Vanderbilt game.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think, and I still don't think Ole Miss is all that good, but when we're talking about the SEC right now, this is kind of a conversation that we've run into. I mean, beyond Alabama and probably Georgia, and I think you can classify Auburn in its own tier at the number 3 spot there, but beyond that, I think, 4 through 14, you put 2 of them on a field somewhere, I'm not real confident in one or the other winning. So it's a whole lot of mediocrity right now in the SEC. So, yeah, I don't think Ole Miss is much worse than anybody else in the conference or much better. I think LSU I still classify as the same kind of team. So, again, that may end up being my upset special this week, Ole Miss over LSU.
All right, the final game on the docket, Auburn at Arkansas. It's at 7:30 on the SEC Network. I guess that the line would be Auburn minus 12. You said Auburn minus 16. And there's actually not a line at this point, so we'll just kind of have to guess on what that will end up being.
Oh, well.
And I think the reason for that is Austin Allen, his availability is not yet known at this point, so they tend not to come out with lines until they know, you know, which quarterbacks will be playing.
Yeah, it is kind of important, I guess, to know whether or not he will be on the field or whether it would be him or Cole Kelly, because there is certainly a difference there. So, you know, I don't know. I'll be interested to see where it comes out. It'll probably come out right at 14 and we'll tie.
Yeah, and you know, last year this was a 56-3 game. This was one where I don't know if you recall, but essentially from what I remember, Auburn scored on the first play, and they basically did that for about four drives in a row. And it was clear that Arkansas was. It was one of those games where last year Arkansas they show up and then the next week they didn't, and this was clearly one they didn't. Do you think there's any kind of revenge factor in this game?
No, obviously Arkansas is going to, they're going to have players who think about that and they want to get revenge and they want to win, but you know, that honestly, that's not enough. I don't think in a game like this, I think Auburn's just clearly more talented. I think they're clearly a better football team. They're going to be coming off that loss to LSU as well. So I like Auburn to go into Fayetteville and get a comfortable win. You know, I do see this being somewhere between a two to three touchdown kind of game, though. I don't think it's going to be like what Alabama did to Arkansas, or, you know, it's not going to be some kind of 45-7 kind of deal. I don't think. I think it's a little more respectable, maybe a 31-17, 31-14, somewhere in there.
Now, I tend to agree, but let's just say that Arkansas does pull somewhat of a stunner here and beats Auburn. The following week, they'll play at Ole Miss, then Coastal Carolina, at LSU, Mississippi State, Missouri. That's not a bad slate. You know, if they can get some momentum, you know, they're going to need several players to emerge to make that possible. But I mean, an upset here, and just like we saw with LSU upsetting Auburn, like anything's can happen. The back end of their schedule is not bad.
Yeah, I think what will happen is Arkansas will win a couple of those games. Like they'll maybe beat Mississippi State, Ole Miss, or Missouri. I don't see them winning at LSU. I mean, they could though, but again, like we talked about with the last couple of games, I think that the SEC is so average right now, from two or three, or from about number three down, that I think everybody's going to average out. I think we're going to see about what we saw last year, where you got a whole bunch of 8-4s and 7-5s.
Yeah, it's interesting. This will only be this will be the third home game of the season, but I don't really count New Mexico State. I'm sure the crowd wasn't too great for that. And this will actually only be the third one in Fayetteville. So I'll be interested to see the crowd for Arkansas. I think that will say a lot from what they think of Brett Bielema and how bought in the fans are. And they really need that crowd to show up and root on the Razorbacks in this one.
Yeah, because they're a 2-4 football team right now. I mean, they are terrible, so at least record-wise. So your only wins are over New Mexico State and Florida A&M. So if you're going to get a quality one somewhere, the fans are going to have to show up for a game like this. Or yeah, I mean, I don't know. They'll probably get Coastal Carolina in 2 weeks. I don't know if they'll be able to get over this one in Fayetteville, though.
I know in the previous one we kind of talked about his buyout. You know, now that that's down, if Arkansas misses a bowl game, it's just hard to see them bringing back Bielema in my mind.
Yeah, I think so, too. I really do. I don't know how, at this point in time, how you retain him. I think we're going to see a lot of shakeups in the SEC, for sure, at Tennessee, and at Arkansas. I still think Kevin Sumlin can save his job. I think that Texas A&M, if they finish strong, I can see him returning and people being a little bit more happy with him. I guess right now, after Tennessee and Arkansas, I would say probably Florida, maybe McElwain might have the hottest seat at this point.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. It's just interesting how quickly this all turns.
Yeah, should be fun to watch. Anything else this week before we get out of here?
No, just hopefully none of the coaches have been fired, when this posts.
Yeah, hopefully not. Or hopefully Butch Jones and Brett Bielema will be able to go get lunch together, if that is the case. I think I remember seeing that those guys at SEC Media Days in 2013, I think their first media days, I saw a bunch of pictures of those guys, of them having lunch together. So I don't know why I just thought of that, but it seems like they could renew their friendship if that happens again.
And I think if anything does happen with Bielema, he doesn't get a job immediately. I think that his next career could be the media. He seems like a natural for that.
He would be fun. I would be totally on board with that. I do like Bielema. He's got a great personality. I wish you could say the same for Butch Jones, but I would imagine the media is probably the last thing that Butch Jones would have on his plate if he's let go to Tennessee. So anyway, fun podcast on this one. This has been episode number 20 of That SEC Podcast. For SEC Mike, I'm Cody McClure. We will see you guys next time for our predictions on episode 21. So until then, have a great week, and we'll see you next time.